Today we sit down for another installment of Peace, Police, and Everything in Between. We are meeting with Mayor Tom Roach of the City of White Plains, New York, and a member of his staff, Ms. Pasquale, who has been heavily involved in a new committee on police reform. We will be focusing on topics that were brought to light as a result of the turbulent events this summer. Included in these events and topics are police reform, criminal justice, and racial relations in the United States. We hope you enjoy.
So before we start, I just wanted to thank you guys for joining us. I know you're especially busy on this day with the snow we just received, but we really do appreciate your coming on and discussing these issues with us. The first question before we get into the real questions is, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your career, your background, just so that the viewers get a sense of who you guys are?
Okay. Well, I'm Tom Roach. I'm currently mayor of the city of White Plains. I'm an attorney. I was an attorney when I first got on the council, and I still am an attorney. I just don't practice at this point. I'm the first one in my family to be able to go away to college and graduate and earn a four-year degree. And I went straight through college and law school, and I'm public education K through law degree. I went to public schools. I went to UAlbany undergrad, and I went to University of Buffalo for law school. So I'm proud of that. And when I got out of law school, my first job, I didn't go to Wall Street. I took a job, Legal Aid Society, Bronx County, representing poor people charged with crime. So a lot of the issues that people are discovering and discussing now, I was in the middle of many years ago. And from bail and bail reform and all those things were something that I had direct involvement in. And I saw the devastation of the crack epidemic and what it did to the community and how overloaded the system was. And but that's why I wanted to do it, because I felt like I want to do something. It's easy to talk about it, but back then we didn't have social media, so that you couldn't just, you can just talk to more people, but I wanted to actually try and do something, and hopefully I did. So for me, this police reform is great. It's a great opportunity. We have a great police department in White Plains, but I think it's something that has to be addressed. It's a strange, policing is very strange, because if you get sick and you're driving on the Pennsylvania Turnpike and you need to go to a hospital, when you pull into the hospital, you pretty much know you may not be at, you know, whatever the best hospital for a particular thing is, but there's a level of training and accreditation. And when you walk in, a doctor walks in the room, you don't say, I wonder if this guy knows what he's doing, okay? Or this woman, whatever, you know, whoever it happens to be. But in policing, department by department, state by state, the training, the requirements, the accreditations, if any, are all over the place. And so it's something I think has to be addressed. That has to be addressed on a national level. That's my two cents on that. And Karen?
Thank you, Mayor. And I'm Karen Pasquale. I have been working with Mayor Roach for about 9 years now, since shortly after he became mayor. Before that, I worked at the county level of government and also in the state legislature, and also briefly at the New York Power Authority. So my career has been predominantly in government, in both the legislative branch and the executive branches. And I've really focused on policy development, legislative, you know, bill drafting, and program analysis. And in addition to that, government relations, community relations. So those have been my primary areas of focus. In the mayor's office, we have a pretty small shop, and we do an incredible amount given the small number of people that we have. So I also do a lot of the communications for him as well. And in particular, well, everyday communications, but especially we work together on emergency communications. So, and my educational background is I grew up in Westchester primarily, and went to SUNY Albany, and where that was a great introduction to state government and the state legislature, and majored in political science there, and then did my master's at NYU at the Wagner School of Public Service. So that is my background.
All right, thank you. So our first question takes us to the events actually that inspired us to make this podcast series, and those are the protests this summer. So what are your opinions on that? Was it productive? Was it counterproductive? Was it too violent? Did they do it perfectly? What are your views on the protests this summer?
Well, of course it was productive, and of course it's necessary, and it's a basic right of Americans to petition the government for redress, to peaceably assemble. And the City of White Plains is the hub of peaceable assembly in the city, in the county of Westchester. So when people want to protest, they don't, I don't want to generalize, and I won't name any particular communities, but really people come to White Plains. I mean, it's just what happens. And we probably had more than 40 vigils, protests, and other marches related to police reform here in White Plains. And not a single act of violence, not a single act of vandalism, no police officers injured, no arrests. And because who were really caring about these issues were peaceful people. You had issues with violent people trying to infiltrate these events to try and create a different vibe. But I also think the nature of police response matters. Our police officers do not attend events in riot gear so you just won't see that. We don't, since I've been mayor, we haven't responded. We have tons of protests every year in White Plains. You know, everything from union rallies to whatever issue comes up. And I think part of it is how you approach it. We approach it that these are peaceful people that want to be heard. And many of the events, you wouldn't even see a police officer. They're observing, but not in the middle of it. So I saw protests where officers in riot gear marched with the people, and that was great. But I also wondered why they came to the event in riot gear. I don't want to say, there are definitely situations where that would be appropriate. I'm not going to say that, but I think it does create a different vibe, to use a technical term. So, but I think it's great. I think this is a real opportunity to make positive change in the country. And I think that that the protests were very much a part of that.
So one topic of discussion that came out of these protests was about funding. So for people who aren't as familiar with the budget of the City of White Plains as perhaps yourself, could you break down how much money goes towards policing, or, you know, roughly how much money goes towards policing versus schooling versus social services?
I really can't off the top of my head. I mean, but I can tell you this, we have 200 police officers. We have 150 firefighters. Your budgets are going to skew. Those are personnel dependent departments. So you're going to spend more money. We have 850 employees, and you have 350 in police and fire. So you have other departments where a lot of money could be spent on other things, but you need the people. So I think it's not so much the calls to defund police receive no traction, really. People want policing. What they want is professional policing based on a guardian mentality, that their job is to guard and protect, not an occupying force. And that in some cities, I think that is the perception of the public, that the police have become, in some communities, are an occupying force. And when you get to that point, you have a problem. So for example, in our last budget, we actually added police officers. And we did that because we were able to do that. The city is growing. And our revenue increased, and we're able to have more officers to do the type of policing that we want. Community policing is more labor intensive. So if you're going to have officers that are assigned to a particular patrol, a particular area, and they're going to go on foot, and they're going to go talk to the the people in the stores and shops and the people in the buildings that are in their patrol area, you need more people, because if you're gonna just drive around a car and wait for a radio call, that's less expensive. But I think we want our officers and to get to know the people. And so the other thing that's important is if you defund, so we want to train people, right? And we want to find the best people. And if you defund, you take away training. I mean, training is not just the cost of the actual training. In White Plains, we take every officer off the street for a year for training, for retraining. So there are departments in this country where you come out of the academy and 20 years later, that's your last training, basically. I mean, but we spend a week with everybody, and that includes de-escalation. It includes implicit bias and the types of things that people have come to be concerned about, but that we have incorporated in our training for quite some time. So it's I recognize it as an issue. It seems to have kind of faded as an issue, because I think as people get into it, they realize we have the right to demand quality, professional, guardian-based policing. And to say that the solution is just get rid of the police is kind of a cop-out, because it's hard work to do things right. It's easy to just decide we're not going to do it at all. And I think the public, that had the effect, I think, of maybe turning some people away. I think that faded very quickly, and it was good, because most people are behind this, and the protests showed that. But if you make it about, if you have a referendum, should we defund the police? It's not going to go well if you want to defund police. I don't think people want that. But I think we do have the right to examine the budgets and how we spend our money. We don't have military. We're not a militarized police force. We have gear. If something happens, we're a city. And, you know, the threat is real. And it's as I said, it's not from peaceful protesters. It's from people who want to interfere with peaceful protests. That's generally the issue. You have school shootings and things like that. And when the police respond to that, they are trained now to go in the building by themselves against somebody. Could be three people, could be two people, could be one person in body armor with a military assault rifle. And they will go in there to try and stop that. So I think that when you look at it, you know, that's not the place to look. I do think you look out for certain things, but for example, most of the equipment that we add makes people safer. I mean, we have the ability now to see into apartments and to see in cases where someone's barricaded, things like that. There are actually cameras that are like robotic, and they're kind of a ball shaped thing. If you can pass through a window, can roll around and see what the situation is. And it actually can help keep people safer. So, but we're careful about how we spend it.
And if I could just add one additional point, because you mentioned in discussing budgets initially as part of your question, how much money to public safety versus education. I want to clarify that, at least insofar as the city of White Plains goes, the education budget, the public school education budget, is completely separate from the city budget. So we do not, as a city government, control that. There's a separately elected White Plains School Board. I'm sure you guys are all familiar with that. So I just wanted to have that out there as a clarification.
Yeah, and as far as education, substantially, the school budget is substantially higher than the entire city budget. Never mind splitting out police.
All right, that's good to know. So what I'm picking up on is that there are multiple different ways to get to the same goal. Everyone wants the same thing in the end, but people go about it different ways. Some people want defunding the police. Some people, it seems like yourself, might actually just want reallocation of funds or more funds towards training the police. But some people argue that police departments themselves actually provide too many services, and that training shouldn't go towards police officers, but actually social workers or other professionals in social services, people who focus on mental health and substance abuse. So would you sign any legislation that gives more funds towards social services from policing, or that lets social workers handle some of the jobs that police officers have previously been handling?
There's multiple questions in there, but I don't see why. Why is it that you have to move funds from one to the other? Why don't we fully fund everything? And I can say that, again, if you live in a town, you benefit from cities because much when people are in many ways, but one way, when people have difficulties, become homeless, things like that, they come to cities. And then we have a social worker that is with a police officer or two who are out every day in our city meeting with people and trying to get them into services and working with them. But they're not always gonna be there. You want your, believe me, the state has abdicated its responsibility, in my opinion, or has not met what they should be doing in terms of mental health treatment. You're all too young to remember, literally all of you, but me, when Geraldo Rivera was relevant and he exposed the horrible conditions at a place called Willowbrook in New York. And it led to changes in law that took people with developmental disabilities and other issues out of institutional settings and put them into the community. But other people were simply just released. So there has to be something between one flew over the cuckoo's nest and nothing. And I think the state has to step up. I do believe that there should be more involvement of social workers. But when people talk about like police do too much, they would agree. The role of a police officer expanded dramatically. We have a leading domestic violence program, White Plains. It is really the original in our area. And we offer our expertise to other departments. Because back in the day, when I was a young attorney, what would often happen at the arraignment on a domestic violence case would be that the complainant, usually a woman, would come and say, I want to drop the charges. And as the defense attorney, I would say, talk to the DA, not me. And then they talk to the DA, and often that's what would happen. And that's crazy. It treated the fact an assault that took place in a home as somehow being not a crime in a way. And so that has shifted dramatically in my lifetime. The focus became, and people should know this, when there's a criminal case, it's not you versus him. It's people of the state of New York versus. So the crime has occurred, you're a witness. If you're the victim, you're also a complaining witness. But what we try and do is get people into, make sure, and you know, it's largely women, know that being, your offender being, you're the person who's harming you being dealt with is not gonna endanger you or your children. You're gonna have a place to live. You're gonna have a place to be safe. So that's what we want our cops to be trained. So it's great to have a social worker there too. And that's something that we would like to do. We'd love to see some help from the state. We send an awful lot of money there. We'd love to see some help in that area. So during the business hours, we do have a social worker on, but I think, you know, you still need to train the police officers. I'll give you an example. We had a fire in Battle Hill the other night. The first responder on the scene was a police officer with the ESU truck. There was someone trapped on the second floor. He took a ladder and extricated the person from the building while the fire department was on the way, because police are on patrol. So they will often be closer to what's happening. And so they'll respond to it. So I do think there are areas where you can examine that. And that's part of what our committee is doing right now. And I do believe there are times when we can remove police from the response. But when you start doing a blanket, it's gonna have an adverse outcome at some point. If a police officer could have responded to something, but we had a policy they're not allowed to, I think we've got to have something in the middle. And I think funding for mental health issues in this country and in the state is woefully inadequate. And I would sign any legislation. You see, I'm a little outspoken about it. Because I feel very strongly about it. I think that it's neglected. And I think to expect local government to solve all the problems is not appropriate. So I would sign any legislation. If you gave us the money, we'd have, we would love to have more social workers. And I think we're going to wind up with more anyway, to be honest with you, because that's something I think is going to come out of our committee. But I don't know, because I'm hands off.
Well, I would just add that I think it's great to hear you guys asking this kind of question, because this is exactly the kind of topic that our police reform committee is really discussing and grappling with in detail now. So you're definitely asking the right questions and you're on the right track with your questions. And because we are a city and we see issues that perhaps some smaller villages or towns don't see or don't see to the extent that cities see, we have for a long time, as the mayor mentioned, worked with Westchester County Department of Community Mental Health. And they have assigned mental health professionals to work with our police officers. And they routinely respond to calls with our police officers. Could we use, they are right now available to us Monday to Friday, like 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. And that covers a good amount of the need, but could we use them more? Of course. And another thing to keep in mind is that when the governor's executive order came out, Executive Order 203, it required every municipality with a police force to undertake this comprehensive review of its policing. And that includes Westchester County. So Westchester County right now, just like the city of White Plains, is undergoing a similar review process. And one of the things that our police reform committee here in the city is looking at and thinking about and talking about as part of our recommendations is, whether to recommend something along the lines of what you suggested to the county, to have the county place greater priority on making mental health professionals available to work with municipal police departments.
We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back in a moment with more of Peace Police and everything in between.
So one response that we received was, how do you hold police officers accountable for wrongdoing and misconduct? So how do you root those people out of a police force? How do you hold them accountable?
Well, there's a process. It's under state law in order to remove a police officer. We have internal affairs that does an investigation, and the theme, we get a lot of people that want to be White Plains police officers. So we're very careful about who comes on. I think we usually get about 3,500 people take the test and qualify. And out of that list, we will hire maybe, I think it's like 20 people over the course of the list. So it's like Harvard stuff, And so, so they try very hard to get the right people. If we get someone who doesn't work out, then we will remove them. And one of the things that the police chief was here when I was first a council member, but the policy has been carried forward is that we reward intelligence, not aggressiveness. So we want officers to use, that's why you spend money on training. You want people to be able to handle things before they get to the point of hopefully avoiding some of the physical arrests that take place and things like that. So, but it is, I know that some of the changes that are coming or have happened are great, because it's when an officer is let go by one department, everybody should know why, so that officer does not show up in another department. But yeah, we will spend, and there's hearings. I mean, if an officer or a firefighter doesn't, if they choose to contest the dismissal, then we have hearings and we have to hire sometimes experts. But we will do it. We'll spend the money. It's too important a role to have anybody there that is not up to our standards. We're careful about where we hire from in terms of police officers that have experience, what departments they come from. It's a lot of thought goes into it. And our leadership is a leadership that, as I mentioned, values a well thought out approach rather than an aggressive approach. So I think that carries through. I mean, leadership carries through the organization. If you have to have your people that are at the top demonstrating the conduct you want to see from everybody else.
So the protests this summer brought to light very specific types of police interactions, and those were negative ones that had to do with the race of the suspect, of the victim, as it turned out in many cases. Some people said that policing, the institution of policing itself, is inherently racist. Some people say that if you become a cop and you enter into the system, you are contributing to a racist system, even if you're a great person otherwise. What is your response to people who think this?
I mean, I don't even want to kind of, I think some of that is just, so we want good people to become police officers. I mean, unless you're advocating that we don't have police, which is, you know, one of the reasons I am pro gun control is that when the right to keep and bear arms was put into the Constitution, it was because everyone had to defend themselves. So in the Wild West, in all the movies, you can see a time when you didn't like what was going on, you took out your gun and shot the guy, and that was justice. So policing, modern policing, is intended to take that out of play. So I don't know, you can't get rid of it. So if you can't get rid of it, you want the best people in it. So it bothers me to hear people say that. It's a very, very difficult job. And I think it's going to be even harder to recruit people to do it in the future. But I think we have to do everything we can to make it appeal to more people as a career, because you want the best people there. I mean, we've sworn in people that were teachers that became police officers. That's the kind of, it shouldn't be for people that want to arrest people. It should be for people who want to help the community they live in. So so that's how I respond to that. I think it's the easiest thing in the world to throw in the towel. But I could give you examples of, you know, terrible people doing terrible things in neighborhoods where people are afraid to talk to the police, but we've developed a relationship so they can. And we find that person and we arrest them, and then people in that community are safer. And I don't know that you want to walk away from that. But it does concern me, because I think it's a job where you want people that want to serve.
And I think one of the reasons that the protesters thought these things was because they were protesting in cities, and in these cities, that's where you find many of these, you know, racial injustices and these acts of misconduct. But we don't seem to see that in cities like White Plains. So what is it about White Plains? What do they do that makes their policing so much better than in New York City, and that prevents these sorts of misconduct?
Well, I'm not going to comment on New York City, but I'll just say that any department can have a person who you find doesn't belong there. But it's not like the bad apple's a true thing, but you want to create a structure, you want the structure of society to function in a way that a bad apple can have this impact. So it's a big, big question. I think it comes from leadership. And, you know, any job I've ever had, you know, you learn about what the job is, then you get to the job, and they give you whatever training, and then you get to the people you're gonna work with. And they, you know, and I've been working jobs since I was 14 years old, right? I worked on, I spent a summer loading dock truck guy. And they teach you, and then you get there, and then the guys go, nah, that's not how we do it. This is how we do it. So if you get to a police department, it could be like that too. Train all this great stuff, get to a department where the person supervising you is saying, yeah, that's great in theory, but here's the way it is, and does damage. So you want a department where that's not the case. And so we worked hard here from our leadership down to our command staff, down to the captains, lieutenants, sergeants, that they are modeling the right behavior and rewarding community positive behavior. And I can tell you, I meet a lot of police officers here, and they love their jobs. I mean, when you see them, we had, during the beginning of COVID, we were very concerned that people who are not eligible for unemployment and don't have jobs where they can work from home or get paid to stay at home, we're gonna not be able to eat. I mean, that's what I was, that was one of the first things that came to me when COVID started. So rather than rely on just the charities that were, have been performing that service, we created, I think we're the only community that did it. The city created its own food distribution, and police officers participated in that, and they were tremendous, and they loved it. I have to say, when we opened one in Battle Hill, the officer in charge of whose patrol is Battle Hill, came over to me and said, "I love that you're doing this for my community," because he viewed where he patrolled as his people. And he spoke in Spanish to people who were online. And that's what you want to see, I think, from police officers. And I don't take credit for that. I think that it's been this culture forever. Not forever, I don't know about that, but for a long time. My great grandmother was the first police matron in White Plains, which was when women started to get arrested. They thought that a woman should be with them. And so I'm looking at a picture of my desk my mother's aunt sent to me when I got elected mayor. And she is a funny woman. I never met her, but she was apparently a hilarious woman and cared for the people that she was with. My mom says she used to bring in makeup because, you know, this may sound gender biased, but we're talking about the 40s and 50s, so that a woman could feel better when she walked into the courtroom. Looked better, our own stuff. So I don't know how to say it. I think that the community does recognize that, and I think the police feel that. I can tell you protests where, you know, our kids from the high school were protesting, and one of the officers like turned to me and say, "I'm so proud of them." I mean, that's what you want your police to be, and not everyone is going to be like that. Let's face it. But our job is to try and make sure that as many of them as possible are.
I think that the mayor is absolutely right. And I think it's just this, and he touched on it, it's this combination of starting during the hiring process with, you know, how we recruit and what the qualifications are that we're looking for. So I think that there's great attention on the part of the White Plains Department of Public Safety in trying to get those who we feel would be a good fit for White Plains from every aspect. And then once they're on the job and they go through, all new recruits in Westchester go through the Westchester County Police Academy for an initial round of training, but then the continuous in-service training that our police officers get. The mayor mentioned it's like 35 hours of training, additional training every year, which is unusual. Many of the local departments don't offer any supplemental training or nowhere near the amount of hours that we offer. And this consistent training that's constantly being looked at to incorporate new thinking, new research, you know, new focuses, I think is a key part in, you know, so you try to get the right people, and that's of course not 100% guarantee, it can never be, but you try to get the right people and you constantly reinforce through the training and through the culture of the department, right? What is acceptable in this department, the professionalism, and the standards that we expect all of our officers to abide by. And I think that goes a long way toward countering some of the arguments that police departments are inherently biased. If you know, we make a tremendous effort to have a diverse police force. And so just by bringing in, you know, a diverse group of people and offering them significant regular in-service training, you know, plus the culture within the department, it makes a big difference overall on an everyday basis.
We're going to take another short break, but we'll be back in a minute with more of our conversation with Mayor Roach and Ms. Pasquale.
So one of the things that I think has been frustrating towards the people who have been protesting for legislation and change in policing has been the fact that whenever it seems that the public wants a change like this to be done, when it seems like a majority of people want this to be done, nothing gets done, or nothing gets done soon, or not to the extent that they were looking for. So why does it always seem like people have to wait so long for changes that it seems everyone wants?
Well, I don't know if it happens all the time. I think there is our culture now is instant results. And but I think when you have an issue as complex as police reform, I think very often people's good and positive instincts that they want things to be better generalize that every department is in the same position. So it's like, you know, some departments were in better position than others, so they require less change. In other departments, the dissolution of the department is the right thing to do. It's happened. I mean, where they have just taken down the whole police department and started over. So you have extremes. I really think we should work harder on getting out the word of what's being done and what's happening in a positive way all the time. You know, this moment in our nation's history where so much of our national focus is on policing is a real opportunity. But it can't happen overnight. And but things were done immediately. I mean, we looked through our policies to see what we could do differently. And we have, you know, banned chokeholds were already banned here. You hear other departments say you can't ban chokeholds. Well, we did it a while ago. And even before we literally banned it, it had been, it had not been taught or practiced, but, there's other policies that we have in place already, but I know when that happened, our department researched the duty to intervene. Does anyone have better language than we have? And they found language they thought was better, and they changed our language. So things can be changed quickly. I think for me, this police reform process is not just about the final results of what policies may be changed or what language may be altered. But it's also about the community and the police working together and talking about the complexities around these issues and to better understand each other's perspective. And I feel like that's happening with our committee, that from a few people that are on it have reached out to me. It feels like that's what's happening. I hope it's the beginning of a different interaction between the police and the community, more fluid back and forth relationship. We do something in White Plains that we have a citizens academy. So you can sign up for this. It's 6 or 7 weeks long. And it's one day a week or one night a week. And it's a combination of classroom, but also being out on patrol, learning about how officers train, what they do, what they face, how they deal with different situations. And I will be invited to come and talk, just give a quick hello when people come in for the training. And I will see the people in the audience and I will see people who I know have a jaundiced view of policing. No one has told me when they were done that it was bad. They tell me that it was a great experience. I think it's a great experience for our police officers as well. So, you know, that's what I have on that.
There is one thing that I'm noticing, not more with regard to policing and, you know, government action with regard to racial injustice and racial problems. It seems like when a government official discriminates against a citizen on the basis of race, that person can get fired and it's a lot easier for something to be done about that. But when a citizen discriminates against another citizen, nothing can really be done about that. So how do we get people to stop being racist towards each other? Is that the government's role at all? Can the government do anything about it?
I think the government can certainly do something about it. I don't think everyone, if I knew how to do that, oh man, if anyone knew how to do that, think about how different our world would be. It's ignorance and hate, and it's, you know, it's amazing to see. And then you have the quiet, what systemic injustices that happen that are just, you know, what laws do we choose? You know, when you make drugs like this terrible thing, and drugs are terrible, right? People are addicted. But that's why you had such a mass incarceration situation, like during the crack epidemic, and it's continued with other drugs. So you look at things like the Stand Your Ground laws. That were the Stand Your Ground law that was involved with Trayvon Martin's murder. Like, you have states that say, what I learned in law school is the reasonable, they said at the time, reasonable man test, but the reasonable person test. Were you reasonably in fear, like view self-defense? Were you reasonably in fear of serious bodily injury or some language like that? Because if you can run away, you should run away. But they changed the law to say, if you, not a reasonable person, you know, because later on someone can judge whether you were reasonable. These Stand Your Ground things are, if you feel that you're in danger, you can take action. That's crazy. I mean, that's, and so I think that's the type of thing that government should do right off the bat. I do think leadership, like, you can't have people in high positions of power, and I'm not going to go like say who, but in very, very high positions of power who create normalcy around hatred and encourage hatred. And that's not what should be happening. It should be, our leaders should be people who are trying to say, look what we have in common. Look what we can do for each other. Look at that person standing next to you as a person, and not what we've had from some of our electeds and continue to have, certainly at the federal level, I'll just say. I think that's disheartening. There are, I think one thing we should always do is there are remedies. So if someone is discriminatory, there are places to go. There are federal laws that require that people not discriminate. And we need to make sure that those people feel comfortable in raising the issues that they deal with so that they can be addressed. So I think it's incumbent on all of us, every single person in this country. It's a democracy. So we have in the past, people start to take it for granted. Look, we just had an election that some people are still saying shouldn't count, that we should do it again. That's the same as saying that's a coup. So we can't take democracy for granted. So we have to work, all of us, every day to preserve this gift we've all been given. When Lincoln gave the Gettysburg Address, and all of you should go home and read it, even if you think you know it, it's an amazing piece of writing, because in 2.5 minutes, he summarizes what the country's about. And he, when I read it, he's talking about democracy, not as this take it for granted, but as a fragile vessel that can shatter if we don't do something about it. And he's pointing out, look at all these people that are buried here, gave their lives for it. Now it's up to us to keep it going. So I think that's up to, you are all ahead of the game. You're doing this today. You're taking your time. It's a snow day, right? I don't know if you're getting a snow day. White Plains, they decided to give everybody a snow day, even the virtual kids, which is great. They're all sleigh riding at school, probably. but I think, you know, you already are out there asking these questions. But I think it's something we have to really get out to people. And that's why when you asked me about, do I think the protests were good? Yes. That this is ours. We are the ones that have to make it work the way it's supposed to work. Not the way it has worked, but the way it's supposed to work. And the work will never be done. And you'll be telling your grandchildren about, you know, what this period of time in our history, and they'll be saying, yeah. And they'll have work to do too. So that's a long way around, but I think I feel it starts at the top, no question. And then, but the responsibility is with all of us.
So I have one last question for you, which is a unifying note. I think that's a good place to end. How do we bridge the gap between people who say blue lives matter, all lives matter, defend the police, and people who say black lives matter and defund the police?
Well, I think when you put people in categories, you've already limited your ability to bring them together. So I like to think that people are people and everyone's got different, they're coming from a different perspective. So when you say to someone, to some people, so when you say to some people, white privilege, some people get their back up because they say, they tell you that they had a really tough life and look how hard they worked. That's not what people mean by white privilege. White privilege means that, you know, I've driven all over the place and I've never had to wonder when I walk into a place, are people gonna, it's just a different world. When I get pulled over, if I get pulled over, I'm worried about a lot of stuff, but I'm not worried about the same thing that someone of color could be worried about. As a parent, I worry about my kids, but I don't have to worry the same way they do when they're out in terms of interacting with the police. So I think people have more in common, and I think that this issue has pointed that out. I think the point that people will say all lives matter, well, of course all lives matter, but all, as they say, all lives don't matter until Black lives matter. The point of that movement is not that other lives don't matter. It's that, hey, you know, look how many people are dying and something needs to be done about it. And I think most people get it. When you and there's people that you can talk to and then they'll get it. But, you can't give up. But I think the majority of people want to live in peace, want to be on good terms with each other. And I think, you know, many, and this is a fact, within Westchester, communities are pretty not diverse. So it's a very diverse county, as often said. But the diversity comes from few communities, if you start looking at it. And I think the long answer to the long term thing here is people have to be more together. People have to listen, and people have to listen to people that have suffered, and not really people who want to tell you how other people have suffered. The people who deal with it every day, we need to listen to them. And if you don't have any people in your life, then how are you going to have that conversation? So I think that's the long-term answer is we got to listen. There's nothing like hearing from another person what they've experienced in their life to give you a perspective about the privilege you have and the responsibility you have. And I think that it's very hands-on and uncomfortable for people, but it's ultimately that's what this is going to take.
Well, Mayor Roach and Ms. Pasquale, this has been amazing. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, and keep it up.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. Take care.
We hope you've enjoyed Congregation Kolomi's latest installment of their podcast on social justice and police reform, peace, police, and everything in between. We all learned a lot today, and we hope that you will have too. Thank you.